Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 31st of August, 2021. It's a Tuesday, right? Yeah, it's a Tuesday. It's the last day of August. August only has 31 days, I believe. Last I checked. Anyway, wouldn't it be weird if like one day had like 42 days for no good reason whatsoever? Like just the opposite, the antithesis of February. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Derek Hunter Podcast. Thank you for downloading, sharing, telling a friend, and all that good stuff. Please keep doing that. Please subscribe to the Curse Program at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. I believe I'll be posting some photographs up there this fine morning as well of the children because they're just so damn cute. And why not? So you get all that stuff, too, for just a low, low cost of $5 a month. Thanks to Life Change Tea. Go to getthetea.com. That's right, getthetea.com. Check out the great deals that they have going on there as a cat jumps up here. Hello, Body Studio. Yeah, there you go. Cameo for, I think that might be the first planned cat cameo. Go to getthetea.com. Check out the great, look, this is the tea that makes you go. It's the tea that keeps you regular, cleans you out, and then you find that you have more energy. I'm telling you, you get more energy, more pep in your step. Plus, it's good to just get that stuff out of you. Get that stuff out of your body. You feel so much better. And enter promo code Derek at checkout, and you get free fast shipping on top of everything else. Getthetea.com, the tea that will change your life. Okay, well, later today, at some point on Tuesday, Joe Biden's supposed to speak. We'll see you to the country, probably at night. It'll probably be too late. But what a sick, sick, demented weirdo he is in this administration. We're going to talk about a lot of things today. Now, let's get on with the show. So much has happened since we last spoke that it's going to take a little while to get to all of it. But you sit there and you go, oh, we're getting out of Afghanistan. Yay, we're getting out of it. Yeah, great. There are plenty of ways to get out of Afghanistan. I saw this morning footage of a woman. I don't know. She looked like she was at a CVS or one of the Walgreens, something. She was being asked to leave for whatever reason. And because it's 2021, people, rather than getting involved or even just minding their own business, break out their phones and start recording everything. And this woman walking out of the store was, for whatever, she was mad, and she was throwing things, knocking everything over she could, just spitting it all in the air, causing a complete spectacle of herself. But clearly, by the way she was acting, and frankly, by the way she was dressed, you could tell she didn't care. And that was just how it was. That's kind of how we're going out of Afghanistan. We're just kind of, whatever, who cares, meh. We're going to leave this place much worse than we've had it. Now, it can't be worse than we found it. We found it in absolute and total disarray, but we're actually kind of leaving it almost in the type of situation that we found it. We came in when the Taliban was in charge and ISIS or Al-Qaeda was there. And we're leaving, and the Taliban's in charge, and ISIS is there. Now, the left doesn't really want to admit to this. The Biden administration certainly doesn't want to admit to this. Joe Biden said just last week when talking to George Snuffleupagus that no, Al-Qaeda is not really there. We got rid of them. Don't worry about that. Well, UK Daily Mail has the story and the receipts and the video to prove it. To a close aide to Osama bin Laden has returned to his home in Afghanistan after 20 years of U.S. occupation, just hours until American forces finished their evacuation from the war-torn country by President Joe Biden's deadline, a video purports to show. Now, that's a horrible lead, it's horribly written, but it's also horrible information that it was the chief of security for Osama bin Laden. Or one of his, they seem to have, I love it. There was like 15 different number twos in Al-Qaeda. They just make this stuff up. If you're a member, it's bad enough. Amun ul Haq, a top Al-Qaeda arms supplier, returned to his home in Afghanistan's Nangarhar province on Monday, just over 2 weeks after the Taliban completed its lightning-fast offensive to take over nearly all of the country. Their lightning-fast offensive pretty much meant marching across the country because there was nobody fighting at them, shooting at them. Al-Haq, head of bin Laden's security when he was occupying the Tora Bora cave complex. The two men escaped together when U.S. forces attacked the complex, according to NBC. The Al-Qaeda leader was killed in Pakistan, blah, blah, blah. In the video, a car carrying Al-Haq is seen driving through a checkpoint amid a small crowd. At one point, the car stops and Al-Haq rolls down the window. Apparent admirers crowd the vehicle's passenger side, with men taking turns grasping and even kissing the top Al-Qaeda associate's hand. Two men take a few steps forward along the slow-moving car in order to take a picture. God, this is a horribly written piece of garbage, but the information is conveyed, leaving words out, but the information is right there. There's a picture of him. There's video of him. Osama bin Laden's chief security aide and arms dealer to Al-Qaeda is back home again. Good thing Joe Biden doesn't know about this. Nobody wants to wake him up and tell him. Meanwhile, the United States is bombing alleged people. Now, this is one of the things that we've got to... There was a bombing over the weekend, and boy, howdy, do they really want to... They really want to pretend that they're doing something about those 13 dead American soldiers. They say, we got the one of the bomb makers and one of the planners, one of the people who plotted this whole thing. And you think, okay, great. Well, you just launched a rocket at them. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But what proof do you have? And why does it seem like getting a couple of ISIS-K people is enough for the Biden administration? You know what I mean? It seems like it's enough. Well, we got it. We found out who is involved in this somehow. I don't think they know. And we have bombed them. Okay, well, what about membership in the club? If you're a membership of ISIS-K, to my mind, you're a member of a terrorist organization that attacked the United States of America. It should not be, we are just going to take care of the people who attacked us, period. No, we should go after everybody in that organization, because everybody in that organization would very much like to attack us, period. And instead, we're getting this situation where we took out some. And that's enough. Don't you think that's enough? How much more can we actually do? What do we have to do? Well, 13 dead American soldiers and an incompetent response. Not really sure that works. Oh, by the way, they bombed a whole bunch of civilians as well. We did. Joe Biden did, I should say. And what's really disturbing, we'll get to that in a second, but what's really disturbing is the story out of Politico. Makes it clear that we knew about the attack, where the attack was going to be, when the attack was going to be. And our government, I don't know if they didn't issue stern enough warnings to the military on the ground or whatever the issue was, it didn't do enough, because the attack happened. And Americans died. Civilians died. So it is disturbing. And actually, Admiral Kirby was asked about this today. Admiral Kirby didn't. They had the White House or the Pentagon press briefing, right? And they wanted to, he was asked about this. Pentagon, or the Politico has the story, Pentagon prepared for mass casualty attack at Kabul airport hours before explosion. So just 24 hours before a suicide bomber detonated an explosive outside Hamid Karzai International Airport, a senior military leader gathered for senior military leaders gathered for the Pentagon's daily morning update on the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan. What's pathetic is it didn't have to be a deteriorating situation. There, I'll get to that in a second, but the Biden administration welcomed this weakness, invited this weakness, and is totally cool with this weakness. During the meeting, General Mark Kelly, the chair of the Joint Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, warned of significant intelligence indicating that the Islamic State's Afghan affiliate, franchising it out, ISIS-K, was planning a complex attack, the notes quoted him as saying. Commanders calling in from Kabul relayed that the Abbey Gate, where American citizens had been told to gather in order to gain entrance to the airport, was highest risk, and detailed their plans to protect the airport. Quote, I don't believe people get the incredible amount of risk on the ground, Austin said, the Secretary of Defense, according to classified notes. On a separate call at 4 in the afternoon or 12:30 a.m. on Thursday in Kabul, the commanders detailed a plan to close Abbey Gate by Thursday afternoon, Kabul time. But Americans decided to keep the gate open longer than they wanted in order to allow their British allies, who had accelerated their withdrawal timeline, to continue evacuating their personnel based at a nearby Baron Hotel, which was the hotel that the terrorists attacked. Isn't that interesting? If you know they're coming, and you know where they're coming, and you can't shut down for whatever, you can't tell the Brits, sorry, you're going to have to pay for another night in the hotel. If you can't shut down, how do you not have a more aggressive posture at that place? How do you not have a significantly more aggressive posture at that place? I understand that everybody who came through was already vetted, quote unquote, at the checkpoints by the Taliban, your Taliban partners. But there's nothing preventing you from setting up another point. There's nothing preventing you from adding another layer of security. Yet he is not. They did not. The Biden administration did not. Red flags going up everywhere, bells and whistles going off, and nobody in this administration, nobody in the military command said, okay, well, we've got to keep the gate open for the Brits. That's understandable. So, because of that, we're going to extend the perimeter. We're going to push outside the walls, and we are going to extend the perimeter to, 100 feet, to whatever it is that makes us comfortable, because we have to keep the gate open. We'd prefer to shut it, but if we have to keep the gate open, we're going to make sure it's as secure as humanly possible. Nope. Instead, they just went about business as usual, knowing full well this was going on. And it didn't have to be this way. It did not have to be this way. The Washington Post has a story today. Surprise, panic, and fateful choices. The day America lost its longest war. It's a very long, in-depth piece in the Washington Post, but in it, they reveal a little bit of information that the Taliban was meeting with the Biden administration, right? They're meeting with the Biden administration in Doha, Qatar, right? And they said that the Taliban said, you can pretty much take Kabul. You can hold Kabul. We'll take the rest. We'll be outside Kabul. For your evacuation, you can have Kabul. And the United States said, no, thank you. The United States said, we just need the airport. It's incredibly stupid for reasons I've articulated over the past week. But they said, no, we don't need it. We don't want the whole thing. We will just take the airport. And, of course, all hell broke loose after that. We could have secured the entire city. We had secured the entire city. The Biden administration had a deadline in its mind, in its head, in its vacant, vacuous head, and they did not care. And nothing else mattered. Washington Post reports, in a hastily arranged in-person meeting, senior U.S. military leader with senior U.S. military leaders in Doha, the commander of the U.S. Central Command, including General McKenzie, spoke with Abu Ghani Bardar, the head of the Taliban political wing. Quote, we have a problem, Bardar said, according to U.S. officials. Quote, we have two options to deal with. You, the United States military, take responsibility for securing Kabul, or you have to allow us to do it. Throughout the day, Biden had remained resolute in his decision to withdraw American troops from Afghanistan. The collapse of the Afghan government hadn't changed his mind. McKenzie, aware of those orders, told Bardar that the U.S. mission was only to evacuate American citizens, Afghan allies, and others at risk. The United States, he told Bardar, needed the airport to do that. On the spot, an understanding was reached, according to two other U.S. officials. The United States would have the airport until August 31st, but the Taliban would control the city. Could have had Kabul. Think of all the problems that could have been avoided as we pack up our things and head home from Afghanistan, as we run with our tail between our legs. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans left behind. Left behind. And because of our government, because of what I just told you, if we controlled the city, those people would not have had problems getting to the airport. Those people could have been driven to the airport. The United States military could have operated, could have gone and picked them up instead of cowering in the corner because of Joe Biden. 13 Americans and 170 Afghan civilians would still be alive today if Joe Biden had a pair in his pair of underwear. But he does not. He does not. Post reports, fighters were now on the move throughout Kabul, with the group's spokesman issuing a revision of his earlier guidance. Taliban hadn't intended to take Kabul that day, but Ghani's exit gave the group no choice, along with the United States' disinterest in acting like a superpower and doing whatever is necessary to protect its own civilians. Let that sink in. Everything that happened in the last 2 weeks could have been avoided. But the Biden administration, who has held nobody accountable, therefore it must be okay with the president himself, passed on the ability to control Kabul as we evacuated. We just need the airport. Just when you thought these people couldn't get any dumber, they find a new way to surprise you. Now we'll get to this John Kirby audio after I told you the story from Politico about, hey, they knew that something was coming and they didn't really seem to do all that much of it. Admiral Kirby, retired, was asked about this morning, and he won't comment on it. He's not particularly happy. He's mad at this. Listen to him.
According to Politico, the U.S. knew where the attack would, or roughly where the attack would take place on Thursday and when it would take place. Why were there U.S. troops at that gate at that time?
Jeff, what I can tell you is that we have been monitoring as close as we can intelligence that led us to believe that we were in a very dynamic and in some cases specific threat environment. Number one. Number two, as General McKenzie said, we're gonna investigate. We're gonna get to the bottom of what happened last Thursday. 13 precious lives were lost. We're gonna take that seriously, and we're not gonna investigate it in public. Number three, I am absolutely not going to speak to a press story that was informed by the unlawful disclosure of classified information and sensitive deliberations here at the Pentagon. Just not going to do it.
Just not going to do it. I am not going to talk about a story that comes from... You know what he's doing right there, probably without even recognizing it. He thinks he's being tough and going to stand up and say, well, I'm not going to address this garbage. What he's doing is admitting that the information is accurate. I'm not going to comment on something that came out about classified information, leaked classified information. Oh, okay, so it's accurate information then. Because if it wasn't accurate information, he would deny that it was accurate information. If there was even a possibility, or if he were thinking, he would say, well, look, I don't know. I haven't talked to the people involved, and I'm not going to comment on what's supposedly classified information. I wasn't there. I can't say what was said. No, he's kind of saying, yeah, you know, you got us, but I'm not going to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. It makes Joe Biden look bad, and we have a very strict policy here at the Pentagon. We can watch our soldiers die, but we can't have the president of the United States looking bad. So he screwed up in the way he framed it. But I would just love that standard. Imagine if that standard, because the press didn't go absolutely nuts into a feeding frenzy after this at the Pentagon press briefing after Kirby said that. Imagine if, I don't even know who the Pentagon press secretary was, but whoever it was during the Trump administration, imagine if they said, well, this classified material, we're not going to comment on that. That would be wrong. All hell would break loose. They would be going, no. You don't get to dodge the question like that. Answer the question. It's out in the public domain. John Kirby says, I'm not going to talk about that. And the press goes, well, all right. I fully understand. Got it, boss. Don't worry. I won't make any reference to this in my reporting. You're not happy with Politico. Then I'm not happy with Politico. It's pathetic. Really is. Lapdogs. And those 13 dead Americans because of incompetence. John Kirby, I'm not going to talk about a classified story about how we left our soldiers hanging out there to dry. I can see why you wouldn't want to talk about it. But you shouldn't. You're not allowed to just dodge like that. Well, it's leaked material, therefore we're not going to talk about it. That's not how the world is supposed to work. Washington Post has another disturbing story to show you how incompetent Joe Biden has become. There is no bottom for this guy. There is nothing for this guy. It's shocking. The story, Biden meets with families of U.S. service members killed in Kabul as U.S. races to exit Afghanistan. That's the headline. Do you see the footage of Joe yesterday at the... They called it I don't know if that's the official name or one of the dignified transfer of remains. And there's Joe and Jill, and they're in their Sunday best pretending to care. And they're sitting there, masks on, outside for some weird reason. And at one point, Joe's got his head bowed, and then he looks up, and he's looking around, and then he kind of adjusts himself. He's standing there. It's not that long of a process. And he does one of those moves where he extends his left arm. So you can see his watch, so he can see his watch. He wants to know, how much longer am I going to have to be here? How much longer do I have to pretend to give a damn about this thing? There's stuff I want to do. It's my Sunday, too. Now, what's funny is, the Associated Press or Reuters or one of them fact-checked this garbage. Oh, he didn't really do that. Or, no, they fact-checked him falling asleep in a meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister. You seen that footage yet? He's sitting there, the Israeli Prime Minister's talking about whatever the Israeli Prime Minister's talking about, and Joe Biden has his hands folded on his belly and he's looking down. And his eyes are closed. His eyes are clearly closed. And he's not moving for about 30 seconds. And then the Prime Minister finishes speaking and Joe kind of does one of those awake and speaks. And the so-called fact checkers are running around going, no. He wasn't asleep. Look at him. He responded immediately. I can tell you, my dad had, before he got his CPAP machine, he never was able to sleep through the night. He snored sometimes my bedroom was right below theirs. And if I didn't hear him snoring, I'd go upstairs to make sure that he was okay. Because that's how loudly he snored. But my dad would come home from work and sit in his chair. And one chair was his chair. Nobody else. You could sit in it when he wasn't there, but when he wanted it, it was get out. He'd fall asleep within 5 minutes of watching whatever, usually the news. And he'd fall asleep with the remote on his chest or his belly. Now, when my dad fell asleep, you couldn't really wake him up. You could be as loud as you wanted in the room. You could have the lights on, the lights off. You could flick the lights on and flick the lights off. You could do just about anything. You could grab the remote from him. But the second you change the channel, wait, I was watching that. You're asleep. You didn't know. And he knew exactly what was happening at the moment you turned the channel. He knew. Doesn't mean he wasn't falling asleep. It probably wasn't deep REM sleep. Probably why the guy was tired all the time. But Joe Biden is the exact same way. Closing his eyes, grasping his hands together. It's clear that he is, as they say, resting as he is asleep. He's asleep. He's out. And then he wakes up immediately, shows you that he didn't, you know, he's not a narcoleptic who goes directly into REM sleep. He's just crashing. It's been a busy week for Joe. He's used to getting his first briefing at 9:30 and calling a lid on the day at 1:30. That's, you know, when you start taking somebody with that work schedule at his age outside of their comfort zone, of course they're going to fall asleep when they're sitting in a chair. Joe Biden, when he does speak, when he reads from a teleprompter, sounds like somebody who's already asleep anyway. Nobody should be surprised that this guy is crashing in the middle of meetings in the middle of the day. But to do a fact check, Reuters fact check, clips cut Biden's response during Israeli prime minister meeting. Social media users are sharing a clip of U.S. President Joe Biden during a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, and claiming it shows Biden falling asleep. The videos on social media, however, have been misleadingly cropped. Seconds later, longer footage shows that Biden responds to Bennett. So what? That doesn't mean he wasn't asleep before the moment he responded. Before you woke up this morning, you were asleep. Let me just tell you that. Breaking news, I know. Even the dipwad who did the Reuters fact check here, the moment before they woke up this morning, they were asleep. After a one-day delay due to a deadly suicide bombing in Kabul, during blah, 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 Biden and Bennett held their first meeting to seek to reset U.S.-Israeli relations and narrow differences over how to deal with Iran's nuclear advances. Now, what are the differences? What are the problems? Why do we need to be reset? We had a pretty good relationship with Israel, I thought. But the Democrats hate Jews, and the Israelis just elected somebody who's not Bibi Netanyahu. I don't know where that guy's going to take him. Biden can be seen talking and engaging with Bennett throughout the clip. The short segment, isolated in the Post, begins at the blah, blah, blah. Reuters previously debunked altered clips that made Biden appear to be asleep during events here and here. And they've got links. Of course, Biden falls asleep just for a moment. My dad was the exact same way. You go to the dentist office, sitting and, you know, getting drilled, my teeth drilled by Dr. Floyd. Then you come out and my dad's snoring in the waiting room. Kind of walk by and you nudge him his foot and go, all right, Dad, let's go. And then you get up. Now, their verdict on the fact check, and people get paid for this stuff. So no matter what you do for a living, you're not this worthless. So if you feel like you're not making a difference in the world, at least you're not a fact checker at Reuters. The verdict is misleading. A clip saying Joe Biden fell asleep while in a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Bennett has been misleadingly cropped. Longer version, Joe Biden continued the conversation right after this moment. Blah, blah, blah. The article was produced by the Reuters fact check team. They're doing the Lord's work out there, aren't they? They're not fact-checking, you know, whether or not the Washington Politico is right that the American government knew that there was an imminent attack on that gate, the Abbey Gate at the Kabul airport. They're not fact-checking that. They're not fact-checking whether or not the Biden administration rejected the idea of controlling Kabul with the blessing of the Taliban. Nope, they're not fact-checking that. They're not fact-checking whether or not Joe Biden cost the lives of 170 people, including 13 Americans, through his incompetence and indifference and his unwillingness or inability to adapt to changing events on the ground. No, no, no. They decided to spend 500 words fact-checking whether or not Joe Biden really fell asleep in a meeting, and their answer is it's misleading because he responded. Anybody who's had a parent who falls asleep, anybody who knows anybody who falls asleep knows they can respond and still be have been asleep, and they wake up and they're not a deep sleep right there, but still, this is why our media sucks. And even though when they do something good every once in a while, doesn't mean that they don't suck in general, because they'll always suck. At the core, they're still themselves. Before I get to Joe Biden and how Joe is, I don't know, making a fool of himself and being in, making it all about himself when greeting the families of the 13 soldiers that died because of his ineptitude, I want to talk, I'll defend the Biden administration for a second. On the aforementioned bombing that of the ISIS-K or alleged ISIS-K leaders, personally, I think they should be bombing a hell of a lot more people and be less interested in the people who are directly involved in that attack, and just bomb the hell out of people who are in, you know, members of the terrorist organization. But there are civilians died. It's horrible. It's a horrible situation. A family died. And it's bad. But this is why I think that it was a mistake in the beginning of this war, in the beginning of any war, to embed reporters with the military. The military's job is to kill the enemy. If civilians get in the way, it's horrible, but tough. You know, not many people are willing to say that. The Pentagon should be out there saying that, going, well, you know, we didn't want it. Obviously, we didn't try to kill these people, but it happened. That happens. All right? So you got to move on. It's that simple. Instead, they become all apologetic. They become very concerned about it. It begins to impact the way that you make decisions and the very decisions that you make when dealing in a situation with war, which is stupid, because if you start caring about civilian casualties in the midst of a war, you end up creating a worse situation for the soldiers that you have there and actually prolonging the war. We bombed the hell out of Dresden to send a message as much as to damage the Nazis. That was it. You couldn't do that today. It worked. It helped. We damaged Germany's production ability as well as breaking their will. Couldn't do that anymore. It's pinpoint precision. And if there's the possibility that you could have civilian casualties, why then you cannot do it. You must find another way. And so you end up with Hamas bombing from schools, launching rockets from schools and hospitals. You end up with terrorists basically strapping children to themselves and going out into the streets and trying to kill Americans and knowing that the Americans won't fire back because they can't fire back. And that's where it gets incredibly stupid. Civilians, yeah, do your best to avoid civilian casualties, but your job is to inflict casualties on the enemy, first and foremost. At least it used to be. So as I said, we've got, you know, the military now is more of a, I don't even know what their mission is relative to what it used to be. It used to be to win wars. Now it's to win hearts and minds. So that the attack on the alleged people involved in, as we haven't seen any proof, and I wouldn't trust this administration as far as I can throw them, but the people alleged to have been involved in the terrorist attack last week that killed 13 Americans. It is the media is focusing on. Now, there are a lot of conservatives out there giving them hell, too. And look, you want to be critical of the Biden administration. I don't particularly care. I think what I have a problem with is what it shows us of what we expect from our military. That, okay, yeah, killing civilians, not good. But is it then to the point, because the left wants to take that and go, well, then we shouldn't be attacking at all. We shouldn't be using the military at all. It's problematic that we use the military because it results in civilian deaths. And the civilian deaths are part of what the military exists to do. I get it. It's horrible. It's heartless. Children, I want you to hear CNN talk about this bombing of the car. And we'll talk about it after we listen to...
Now heard from CENTCOM as well about the U.S. drone strike on an ISIS-K vehicle. This was believed to be a vehicle carrying either suicide bombers or explosives intended for bombings. That vehicle, when it was blown up, set off a sort of chain reaction of explosions. And CENTCOM is now confirming, Brianna, that there were civilian casualties, or that it appears there were civilian casualties.
Say that if you blow up a car filled with explosives, those explosives are going to do what? They're not going to remain inert. They are going to explode as well. That's what they do. If you throw a firecracker into a bucket of firecrackers, there's a pretty good chance that firecrackers are going to go off for a while there. That killed, or even if the explosion of our rocket killed civilians. Sad. Okay. Unintended, I would assume. And honestly, who cares? But the media they love this kind of stuff. It's a human interest story, as they call it. Oh my goodness. It's a human interest, not really a human interest story. It's a media interest story. You might sit there and go, oh geez, it's horrible if you're a normal human being, it's horrible that people have died. Yes, it's horrible that people have died. But honestly, are you going to lose sleep over this? Are you? No, you're not. Are the reporters talking about it as if it's a horrible thing, going to lose sleep over this? No. Are the politicians coming out and saying, oh my goodness, no, they don't care. CNN continued in their coverage of this because, well, eventually, like we said, they'll always revert back to what they really are.
CNN has been doing a lot of digging on the ground and has found that 9 members of one family died as a result of those secondary and tertiary blasts after that drone strike. From what we understand, at least 6 children among the dead, the youngest just 2 years old. So absolutely, there is a sense on the ground in Afghanistan, frankly, that this next few hours can't go soon enough.
It's sad. There's no denying it's sad when innocent civilians get killed, when children get killed. It's horrible. It's sad. But why the dour, we must report this, it must be, okay, we stopped or we punished, we allegedly punished. I'm more interested in whether or not we got people who were actually involved in the attack on the United States than I am about the Afghan civilians. Does that make me heartless? Possibly, probably, whatever. But I'm being honest with you and saying that it's sad, but tough. This is what the military is supposed to do. Think about everything that we've done in the wars that we've actually won, where the military was given a strict objective, and then they were removed. They were allowed to come home. The U.S. actions in World War II would never in a million years be allowed to happen today. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't. There'd be hearings and investigations and allegations of war crimes, unless it was a Democrat president, but eventually there would be. This is horrible. These are monsters. You're killing people. You're civilians. You're this, that, and the other thing. We must be stopped. You must be stopped. You must be destroyed. And you're sitting there going, how does this happen? How do these people do you not want to win the war? And I don't think they want to win the war. I don't think they want to win. I think that they take the side of America's enemies all the time, regardless of who America's enemies are, because they look at the United States as their enemy, and the enemy of their enemy is their friend. It's bizarre to me to focus this much on it. We'll see how long it lasts, but if it lasts more than like 12 hours, this is why I think it was a huge mistake to embed reporters with the military at the start of all these wars, the Afghan war and the Iraq war. So we got Geraldo with us. We got whoever with us. Here's our reporter, and they're setting up quick satellite hits so they go back. And I get it. We knew, the Pentagon knew, the Rumsfeld Pentagon knew that we were going to run roughshod over these people. In Afghanistan, it was easy. There's nobody there. They barely knew how to do anything. Now they're well-armed. It'd be much more difficult since we gave them all those weapons. But they were pretty easy to overrun, which makes you think maybe the people of Afghanistan didn't really want to fight them off in the first place. But hey, whatever. Iraq, they were better armed. They put up a better fight, but we were still far superior. We took them over, but we could have done much better. We could have certainly handled the insurgency in Iraq much easier if we didn't have, you know, this reporter from this place and that reporter from that place embedded with these troops, ready to report on it. Oh, there's a stray bullet over there that hit a kid. There's your story. Well, really? Because we just took out 12 terrorists. Yeah, but you hit a kid. It doesn't matter. Don't you get that's the story. Always assume the worst about the U.S. media because they are deserving of the worst. And so rather than give them an opportunity to once again prove themselves to be the worst, you deny them that opportunity. Now, if a reporter, there's no law that says you have to embed reporters with the military as they march through a country. Nothing. The Bush administration thought, well, we'll be very open about this. Look, it was The president was very popular. There was unity when it came after 9/11. Didn't last all that long, but it was there. And so they thought, we'll go the open route. It'll be nothing but good stories and whatever. It didn't work out that way. They should never have been there. If reporters want to go to the scene, it's horrible to say, but if they want to go to the scene of a war and be right there and be the wartime correspondent, then they can book their own flights. And they can figure out their own way. And they can, you know, cross their fingers and hope for the best. I don't wish them ill, but I don't wish them anything. Do your job, however you have to do your job, to whatever level you're comfortable doing your job. But stop harming the American cause. If you do that, then I got no sympathy for you. Before we move on from Afghanistan for today, with all the Americans being stranded over there and all of our allies being stranded over there, we're not done talking about Afghanistan just because we're out of there. As a reporter pointed out, there it leaves 80,000 people who would have gotten. And you sit there and you go, who the hell did we evacuate? Because the administration is sitting there going, we evacuated 110,000 or 117,000, blah, blah, blah. And then, 5,100 of them were Americans. 5,100. And wait a second. Now, this is what I meant when I said that they're just doing this creative math and they're just making numbers up. They started making numbers up after the feces started hitting the fan. So at the beginning is probably when you were getting accurate numbers of Americans. It was what, 8,000 to 10,000, maybe upwards of 11 to 15,000 Americans in the country that will need to be evacuated, right? That was what we were told at the very beginning when the country was collapsing in Kabul and the Taliban was rolling into Kabul. Now we find out, of course, that we could have held Kabul and we didn't have to cede Kabul to the Taliban, but we did. When you're dealing with a bunch of inbred, toothless morons like the Taliban, you see some of this footage of them. There's some local news reporter sitting there with trying to tell people that everything's going to be fine. There's no reason to be afraid. And behind it, you got like the cast of Deliverance with AK-47s staring not blankly, vacantly. There's a difference between staring blankly and staring vacantly. And you can tell that these guys have probably never seen a girl in their lives, except for their mom, maybe. They've never had a conversation with anybody. They'll never read. They will never read. If you gave them a Dr. Seuss book without any words in it, they would be completely confused and not know what's going on. You're looking at this, and these guys are the ones we ceded the city to. And is it there? And you think, well, the people are screwed. You got to get the hell out of there. Well, at the beginning, we were told there's lots and lots and lots of people we got to get out of there. And now the Biden administration is saying, we did it. We evacuated more than 100,000. And the left, you can see them. They're tweeting pictures of the big house in Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan plays their football games, because the stadium holds like 110,000 people or whatever. And they go, look, we evacuated this many people in 2 weeks. We are awesome. Like, okay, you know, if there's an Olympic event next Olympics for turning tail and running as quickly as humanly possible from a bunch of human sludge, we will make the podium. We did a great job in that aspect. If there's an Olympic medal for leaving a country with your head held high after having accomplished your mission, we won't make that podium at all. But now the Pentagon spokesmodel, John Kirby, was asked about it and basically admitted that the SIVs, the special visas for people, Afghanis, whose lives are in danger because they worked with the Americans, about 80,000 of them didn't make it out. 80,000 of them didn't make it out. And you have to sit there and go, then who in the hell did we evacuate? You're bragging about over 100,000. You got 5,100 Americans, which, you know, in the mid-level estimate is about half of the Americans. And you're just saying, we're done. And you've got 80,000 people that, and their families, theoretically, who have, so it's probably like 20,000 and 80,000 with their families, who have a theoretical legitimate claim to evacuation by the United States government. So who the hell did we get out? We just taken anybody? And actually, the answer is kind of yes. ABC News had an American on. His name was Dan Fox from Kabul. He was not able to get out, at least not as of yet, because he has his family there, and I believe his wife might be Afghani. And he explained to ABC News why there were so many people getting through who shouldn't have gotten through, or maybe shouldn't have gotten through. We don't know. The vetting process, shall we say, is not particularly stellar here. Listen to what they did, according to Dan Fox, who's in Kabul, telling ABC News about the visa program that our government instituted because they were in a panic and in a hurry.
This looks like a U.S. visa, okay? So for those of you who aren't familiar, if you get a U.S. visa, an immigrant visa in your passport, this is what it looks like. But this document has no name. It's not addressed to anyone. There's no serial number, okay, at the bottom. There's no barcode. So thousands of Afghans received this. Basically, everyone who had applied for SIV, these special immigrant visas for the Afghan translators and other people, they received this email. And what do you think happened when these people received an email like this, a document like this, that has no name? Of course, they printed out 100 copies. Even the Taliban can't control, 2,000 or 3,000 people at the Camp Sullivan Gate when you have tens of thousands of Afghans who now have this.
So they sent them blank visas. Basically, you print it up and you print your name in there. You just write your name in there and then bring it to it's like a golden ticket. It's like a counterfeit golden ticket, or at least a golden ticket asking to be counterfeited. Now, this American wasn't able to get out, at least not as of yet. But how many people who did get out, since we know that the federal government, that the Biden administration left behind 80,000, according to the briefing today, Afghanis, who in the hell did we bring out? Who in the hell did we get out? And when will we know? Will we ever know? Does anybody seemingly have any interest in knowing? It doesn't seem like anybody has any interest in knowing. Just now they're coming out. What are you going to do? Here you go. By the way, there's a bunch of them going to Wisconsin. And if you notice, the places that they're sending these refugees, they don't have a say. They don't give a say. They're not interested in, hey, what communities would be best suited for this. That's how you end up with a massive Somali community in Maine and a massive Somali community in Minnesota. You're like, well, there's no rational explanation for that unless the party in power wants to maintain or manipulate the political circumstances. Because once you're here on refugee status, you're on the fast track to citizenship. You're not going to be deported. You really, really have to screw up majorly to run risk of not getting citizenship if you're here as a refugee, and pretty quickly, which means you'll be voting soon. Which means what? You mean you get an Ilhan Omar? That's how you sit there and you go, Minnesota, why the hell is Minnesota, anywhere in Minnesota, voting for a lunatic anti-American brother marrier like Ilhan Omar? And you go, oh, that's right, because the federal government decided that up there was where they were going to send a whole bunch of Somali refugees. And she's what came out of it. She used that and used that to her advantage. Doesn't matter how awful she is. You get that tribal mentality. You get that my team versus your team versus the other team mentality. And you get voters to go, well, she's like me. She looks like me. Therefore, I'm going to vote for it. In fact, liberally, you can do that, and the left actually requires you to vote that way. This person looks like me. The left actually demands that you vote that way for everybody. Except for white people. Then you're not allowed to vote that way. You're a racist if you vote that way. And you're a racist if you vote for somebody who looks like you, even if you're voting because you like them or you agree with them. It doesn't matter. The left has so perverted the mindsets of so many of our fellow Americans that things are absolutely screwed up. And we've now brought in 100,000. Well, I don't know how many came to America. That's another thing we don't know. Relative to the rest of the world. Meanwhile, 100,000 people are sitting in Afghanistan going, what do we do now? What do we do now? It seems almost impossible, even though Kirby said this morning that it's not too late to get to the airport. But good luck getting to the airport and getting through those gates in the time that remains, because there sure as hell isn't a lot of time that remains. And the president of the United States is losing interest. Joe Biden was hoping for a massive hurricane to really decimate the Gulf Coast, to decimate Louisiana. And it did some damage down in Louisiana. Was it Hurricane Ida or something like that? Somewhere in there. I don't know. I don't really care. But Ida. And he was at FEMA yesterday. It's kind of funny because the FEMA people and the National Guard people, they're all running around today saying, well, we're not frontline responders. We're not first responders here. We are here to help you, blah, blah, blah. And like, I remember that. I know that's true. It's absolutely true. That's how it works. The local governments are the first responders in natural disasters. But I remember George W. Bush making that very point after Katrina and being chewed out for it, being just destroyed in the press. Look, he's failed. Bush lied. People died. Oh, the hurricane. It's all George Bush's fault. And like, well, where's the governor? Where's the mayor of Louisiana? Where are these people? Where were they? They were supposed to be the ones doing things, and they didn't do it. It was a complete failure. But now, suddenly, the media has learned about local control in the lead-up to Ida, but it doesn't seem like it was bad enough to warrant the attention so far. The big story is Louisiana is without power. Like, all of New Orleans is without power. Like, oh, no. I mean, they're going to have to pour their drinks in sunlight instead of by candlelight or by incandescent bulb. But listen to Joe yesterday. He was, like I said, he was at FEMA on Sunday. And he opens it up for questions. Now, it's not important what he was doing there. Again, the storm wasn't that big and the storm wasn't hitting at that time. And to think that you could go there and overtake the top story in the country simply because there's a hurricane coming was incredibly stupid. Now, you could maybe expect a couple. Maybe there'd be a question about the hurricane, but you got to know the first question is about Afghanistan. So Joe again does one of those weird, I don't want me to talk to anybody. I'm not supposed to talk to you people, but I'll go ahead and take a couple of questions kind of things. And the first question is about Afghanistan. And Joe don't want to hear that. Joe don't want to hear that at all. So he goes, I don't want to hear that. I'm not going to talk about Afghanistan. And he literally ends it. It's not a press conference. It was a statement. He was reading it. And he turns around. And he doesn't know where to go, so he kind of stands there for a bit. But he, if you watch the video, I highly recommend you seek it out. It's rather disturbing. But it's pretty abundantly clear that he's mad. How dare you ask me about Afghanistan? It's like you brought this on yourself, dude. Anyway, listen to him.
Commissioner, I really think it all works. I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan...
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan now.
Can you say if there's still an acute risk? Like,
okay, so there is President Biden there at FEMA headquarters in D.C.
Now, answer a question if you got a question. Oh, and Afghanistan? I'm not interested in Afghanistan. To hell with you. To hell with you. That's it. And he just turns around. I'm not going to... If you don't want to answer a question about Afghanistan, fine, I suppose... But shouldn't you then say, has anybody got a question about not Afghanistan? Shouldn't you do that? Instead of, well, that's it, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. I've had it. I've had it with you. That is it. You can't ask me any questions that I don't want to have. You couldn't come up with something to say, look, this. Here's how you handle it if you're the president of the United States and you're not senile and mad that you're senile. You say, look... We'll talk about that later. Right now, we're talking about the emergency preparedness for this storm. If there are no questions about that, then these people have to get back to work and everybody's got a lot of important work to do. That's how you handle it. It's that simple. You don't have to go, I'm not talking about Afghanistan right now. You're the president of the United States. You're supposed to be able to multitask. You're supposed to, well, you're president of the United States. You're supposed to at least be able to single task, and you can't do that. But you are supposed to be able to handle multiple things simultaneously because the world never stops. The Taliban isn't saying, well, maybe we shouldn't be such jerks. They're about to get hit with a hurricane at their southern border. No, they don't give a damn. The Chinese communists don't give a damn. They're not going to put whatever they're going to do on hold because it's an inconvenient time for the United States of America. The president should be able to pivot in those things. Just not. He doesn't seem capable of it. Meanwhile, the chief of staff to the president is out there retweeting people sucking up to Joe Biden over Afghanistan, about everything. It's amazing to me. Jennifer Rubin, the bridge troll, pseudo conservative. I'm surprised she didn't get a shot at The View as the so-called conservative. She tweeted out, I'm reminded of the scene at the end of Schindler's List, where we see those he saved and their children. He saved roughly 1,200. Now imagine the photo that would capture the 110,000 or so saved and their children. Whoever saves one life saves the entire world. Talking about Joe Biden. Joy Reid, MSNBC's resident bridge troll, she retweeted that with the comment, it's an astounding human achievement, achieved at great human cost by our military, with some yeoman's work by the State Department and just plain bullheaded determination by the Biden administration, proud of this U.S. mission to end this endless war as messy as it has been, end quote. Joy Reid. And of course, the chief of staff to the president of the United States retweeted that, both of those. You wonder, maybe the president isn't getting the best advice based on the reality on the ground. Maybe you think with these people around him, no way he could get it. The left absolutely hates Ron DeSantis. They despise Ron DeSantis. So it doesn't matter what he does. He's not talking enough about vaccines. Oh, he's pushing vaccines. Oh, he's giving vaccines to the wrong types of people. He put them at the grocery stores, and it should have been at this chain of grocery stores rather than the other chain of grocery stores. Everything that they could possibly come up with, they've gone after him with. Meanwhile, Oregon is a mess. Yes, that's right. Oregon is a mess. You don't hear about it. Oregon is, you know, or every state had their October, November, December, January big surge, you know. Oregon has surpassed that by a lot. Their peak 1,515 looks like somewhere in that range, 1,515 back on December 4th, average 7-day rolling average. 7-day rolling average now, 2,203. 2,203. Yesterday, there were 3,191 cases, new cases. Massive increase, a new record. You don't hear about it because, well, the state is run by a woman who is allegedly bisexual. She's married to a dude, so I don't know how bisexual she is. And she's a Democrat. So there you go. Hawaii, again, their peak before now, their 7-day average, looking for the height of it here, 251, it looks like. 255 on August 29th. That was the big day. 255 new cases. Now, yesterday, 1,658, a 7-day average of 865 versus a 7-day average of 255. See, do you hear about Oregon? Do you hear about Hawaii? No, you don't. The governor of Hawaii is telling you, please stay home. Don't come here. Don't come anywhere near here. We don't need it. We don't want it. Now, that's a state that's biggest import, I suppose, is pineapple. And its biggest industry is tourism. And the governor is saying, for the love of God, don't come here. Please don't come here. But you will hear about Florida today. You will hear about Florida every day because you just hear about Florida all the time. You won't probably hear about this. This one is one of those stories as we sit here, and this is becoming, and this is why things are so screwed up, I think, is because it's becoming more of a culture war than anything else. From the Washington Post, a judge asked a mother if she got the coronavirus vaccine. She said no, and he revoked custody of her son. Let that sink in. When Rebecca Firlit, F-I-R-L-I-T, joined a virtual court hearing with her ex-husband earlier this month, the Chicago mother expected the proceedings to focus on child support, but the judge had other plans. Quote, one of the first things he asked me was whether or not I got vaccinated, Flirt said, 39, told the Chicago Sun-Times. She was not, she said, explaining that she had an adverse reaction to vaccines in the past and that a doctor advised her against getting inoculated against the coronavirus. It poses a risk, she added. Cook County Judge James Shapiro then made what the parents' attorney called an unprecedented decision. He said the mother couldn't see her 11-year-old son until she got a coronavirus vaccine. The child's father is vaccinated. You imagine that? Something arbitrary and irrelevant to your parenting abilities and their deciding on this? The woman filed a petition to appeal the judge's decision. Her attorney, Annette Fernholz, told the Washington Post in an interview, said that the lawyer said that the ruling was an overreach. Quote, the father did not even bring up the issue before the court, Fernholz said. So it's the judge on his own making this decision that you can't see your child until you're vaccinated. This is government overreach. The husband, the ex-husband, wasn't even bringing it, probably didn't even occur to him. Probably didn't even occur to him. But to sit there and say you can't see your child until you get vaccinated. Judges in other states have granted lesser sentences to defendants who opt to get the vaccine or mandated the vaccine as a condition of release from prison for some inmates. judge on the 19th Judicial District Court of East Baton Rouge offered some defendants the option of getting vaccinated instead of completing community service hours. You want to talk about something, a disturbing trend. Right there is a disturbing trend. Not just the case here with the child visitation and custody, but the idea of judges ordering, dictating that you take something. I don't care if you get vaccinated or not. That's your choice. But to sit there and have a judge say, well, it's irrelevant to the issue at hand, but I can. So I'm going to give you a choice. You get the shot or you go to jail or whatever. That strikes me too close to what the progressives used to be when they would, you know, sit around and determine who was worthy of being able to reproduce, who was worthy of not being sterilized, who was worthy of employment or being able to vote or anything like that. The left, the progressives, I guess they're progressives on both sides, but the progressives decided or determined or decreed that there were some people who just were undesirable and should not have any rights or as many rights as you and I do. They shouldn't be allowed to reproduce. Look, if stupid runs in the family, if it's in the genes, that stupid is in the genes, and that was the predicate of the progressive movement and this eugenics argument, that was stupid in your genes. You couldn't do anything about stupid. And so you're going to end up perpetuating stupid. If a stupid person reproduces, there's a good chance they're going to have a stupid offspring. That may or may not be true. It's actually not, because I've known plenty of stupid people who've had smart kids, and I've known plenty of smart people who've had stupid kids. It's more how you raise them than anything else. But the eugenics movement really believed that they could play God. The progressives believed they were gods, and so they just ignored that sort of stuff and went about, well, how closely can you trace your family's roots back to the Mayflower sort of thing? That's what's happening here with this. Again, now, if your employer wants to vaccine mandate, again, that's up to your employer. I don't know what the Supreme Court is going to be and say. If I were an employer, I probably wouldn't do it. But then again, I'm not an employer, and it's really easy to play that game. I don't know what the liabilities are going to be, and who knows if Congress will ever get off their backsides and deal with the liabilities. So that decision is up to individuals. They can always find new jobs. But you can't find new kids. You can't find new kids. And if the choice is get the shot or go to jail, you're not really giving somebody much of a choice. And if the choice is get the shot or not see your kids, you're definitely not giving somebody a choice. That's where it gets into the sickness of this. This is awful. I'm sure this will be overturned by a court eventually, but it will take time. Just like I don't know which way the Supreme Court is ultimately going to rule on a case of vaccine mandates from employers. But it's going to take so damn long to get there. It make you wish that the courts would recognize that, hey, wait a second. We got to get off our asses here. We got to do something. All right. We're going to fast track a case here. I don't care which one it is. It's the concept that's on trial. And let's get somebody up here so we can have a ruling on this. This is where the Supreme Court fails the United States of America. They always say, well, the court is loath to be seen as political. The court doesn't really like to weigh in on controversial issues if they can avoid it. Well, tough. You're paid almost $200,000 a year. Your job is to take care of these issues. If it's controversial or it's too much for you and you can't handle the pressure and you think, oh, your kid's basketball game might be disrupted, or maybe your life or your social circle or your time at the country club will be made awkward, then resign. All right. I don't care which party you're in. Resign. I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative. Resign. If you can't do the job, if you won't do the job because you're afraid, oh, what will it do to the court's reputation? Well, let me tell you that the court's reputation, that attitude, is putting the court's reputation right into the toilet. Directly into the toilet. You're the problem. Why that court has that reputation is that, well, we don't want to be seen as an, oh, maybe we shouldn't. No. The American people are having their rights trampled. The American public are being told it's for our own good. And the American government is saying they have the authority to do certain things for the public good under various statutes that were passed, emergency powers and what have you, most of which have not been challenged because the only invocation of them over time has been very temporary. So by the time somebody brings up a challenge and it goes to court, the harm has been mitigated because the order or whatever that they're challenging has been repealed, been rescinded. These orders don't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. Hopefully they will, but you've got some time now to get these cases up there. You can't say that harm isn't being done like you have in the past, court. It's time to step up and do your damn job. You are paid quite well. Maybe you're not, you're certainly not paid as much as a high-priced lawyer would be at some big law firm, and oh boy, howdy, you could go off and make a fortune if you wanted to, and right over there is the door. You can go do that if you want to. You wanted the prestige of being on the Supreme Court and the stability of being on the Supreme Court because you're not going anywhere unless you're impeached, which isn't going to happen. You can stay there your whole life. You get, you know, your summers off for the most part. You're not back in until the first Monday in October. You can enjoy your life. Well, how about you do your damn job? The American public, you're supposed to be just as much of a servant to us as the other two branches of government. Take up one of these cases. Find out if the, tell us, figure it out, hear the arguments. I don't know what this judge's argument is. I don't know how you'd even, who would even represent the state if a custody case, the judge has determined custody and visitation is based on vaccines, that who, the judge have to go and represent him? I don't know where this goes. Two judges in Ohio have already ordered that some people who receive the vaccine as a condition of their probation. Similarly, two Georgia judges are reducing sentences of some offenders who get the vaccine. In New York, a judge in the Bronx and Manhattan have ordered defendants to get a vaccine as part of their rehabilitation and as a condition of seeking bail, respectively. Now, you can beat the hell out of people on the streets because they're wearing a yarmulke, but if you don't and not get cash bail, you'll be out on the street back in 5-10 minutes. But if you don't have the vaccine, maybe they'll hold you in there. But the judge's ruling in Chicago appears to be the first of its kind. Furlitt and her ex-husband Matthew Duvian have been divorced for 7 years, according to WFLD. Court documents show they have had shared custody of their 11-year-old son since June 2014. Neither one of them commented for the Post. And hearing on August 10th had nothing to do with the revised custody agreement. Her lawyer said no one was expecting the judge to ask the boy's mother if she was vaccinated. Furlitt said she was befuddled by the judge's question. No business asking it, irrelevant to the case at hand, and ruling based on it solely. If there has ever been a time for the Supreme Court to step up, now is it. Where are they? Probably golfing today. Meanwhile, while the world is burning, the President of the United States is, I don't know what he's doing. I honestly don't know what he's doing. Look, given the, I understand why they're doing what they're doing at the White House. You've had the president make a complete boob out of himself, for lack of a better word and a more appropriate word, is what he is. He's failed miserably on Afghanistan. It's too late to fix Afghanistan. You're not going to be able to fix Afghanistan. Afghanistan's going to, all you can do at this point is hope to God that it doesn't go further sideways if you're Joe Biden or one of his handlers. You're just going, just don't make it worse. Is whatever like after we leave, you can blow up anything you want. ISIS, K, you can blow up anything you want. Taliban, T, or whatever. You just leave, let us go. We get out of here, and then we can tout numbers. We can, we're making up the numbers. We'll just claim success, and we'll be out of here, so you won't be able to prove or disprove anything, and so on and so forth. They just want to get to that deadline. Then what they need to do is try and reestablish some sense of, I don't know, sanity, credibility, stability, whatever, of Joe Biden. They need to try and get the people who watched the past 2 weeks going, what in the hell is wrong with this guy? Why is he letting this happen? Why is he doing nothing? Why is this that? What they need to do is give a new narrative. They need to rewrite the narrative. So they're trying now to already distract. The hurricane gave them a shining example of, oh my goodness, here's a chance to lead. So they convened this conference call, this mega conference call with a whole bunch of people. And there's Joe Biden. He's socially distanced. He's sitting there in front of like a big jumbotron with a whole bunch of Brady Bunch boxes across it. And then on the other side of the stage, you can tell this thing is made for TV. On the other side of the stage is sitting Cedric Richmond, who is a former member of Congress, who is a senior advisor to the president. I think he's from the New Orleans area. And Joe, in his introduction, you're going to hear this. He's doddering. He doesn't seem to know fully what's going on. Not really sure what's exactly happening because not everybody's on the screen. And then he refers to Cedric Richmond as his senior advisor and his boy who knows the area, knows what's going on. See, the problem is Cedric Richmond is a black man. And even I, who did not grow up in the Jim Crow South, who has never once bragged that their state was a slave state, as Joe Biden did when he was running for president in 2008, didn't even grow up in a slave state. Even I know that the term boy, when used towards a black man, is a racist term. You don't do that. That was a very condescending way that people, racists in the South, used to refer to black men, to belittle them. Look, boy, you don't know. You got to learn your place, boy, that kind of stuff. Even I know that, even though it's, you know, it has been unacceptable since before I was born to do that. And here is Joe Biden, President of the United States, calling his big advisor that he brought in, he's the one to sit there on the stage with him. This is my boy over here. His boy. This boy knows his thing. Like, whoa, dude. Are you suddenly the racist sheriff from Live and Let Die? What in the hell's going on in there? Listen to this audio. It's unbelievable because he's lost. You can tell he's just lost. He has no idea what he's saying at the beginning of it.
Good afternoon, everybody. We're waiting for a few more people to get on, but we're going to get started, if that's okay with you all. And thanks for joining me. I'm here. The FEMA director is on. FEMA director Chris Welsh, she's on. And I'm here with my senior advisor and boy who knows Louisiana very, very well, man, and New Orleans, and Cedric Richmond. Good afternoon.
Whoa, boy, here's my boy right over here. Now, this is Joe Biden's life. This is Joe Biden, the casual racism of Joe Biden. It's not subtle. It's just casual. It's very blatant, actually, if you look back at the history of it. It is the first mainstream African-American who's clean, articulate, and bright. And man, it's a storybook, man. Remember when he said that about Barack Obama? Oh, boy, howdy, you can't even go into a 7-Eleven in Delaware unless you got a slight Indian accent. Joe Biden again. But this one, this is one you just know everybody's sitting there and just clenching, going, oh, my God, what the hell, dude? He's my boy. whoa, dude. I mean, even I, like, winced at this, going, oh, dude. I mean, I want to hear that again just because it's so cringe-inducing. And I'm not sure. It kind of sneaks up on you. And you could say, well, maybe he was a little confused. No, well, he's, of course he was a little confused. He's confused. He's senile. But to sit there and think that he did this anything other than deliberately, he's probably trying to fumble around trying to figure out who to call on first. And that's why he did it. Not because he was lost in where he was or suddenly thought he was back on a family plantation. Just unbelievable audio. Our president, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, everybody. We're waiting for a few more people to get on, but we're going to get started, if that's okay with you all. And thanks for joining me. I'm here. The FEMA director is on. FEMA director Criswell, she's on. And I'm here with my senior advisor and boy who knows Louisiana very, very well, man, and New Orleans, and Cedric Richmond. Good afternoon.
Yeah, he's a boy who knows Louisiana pretty well. He knows. This boy knows his place. This boy knows his state. Unbelievable. You almost feel bad for the people who work for Joe Biden. Don't you? Every once in a while, like the staff, especially the press staff, we're just like, oh, God. Now we got to spend the afternoon cleaning that up. Now we got to hope that nobody asks about that. We got to try and proactively go out there and head it off at the pass and say, no, no, no. Or they're going to have to do a lot of horse trading. Go, please, we'll give you an exclusive interview with so-and-so, or we'll give you the only scoop on such-and-such. If you just don't focus on this, it'll be curious to see if anybody in the media actually focuses on this. Because you know damn well if Donald Trump said anything like that whatsoever, even if he's talking about Donald Trump Jr. and said, yeah, I'm just talking to my boy, and like the media would go, Donald Trump used a racial slur to refer to his own son today. It must be one of those things. He just came out of his mouth so easily, he had no qualms about it. It's obvious that he uses this racial slur all the time. Of course, Joe Biden isn't Donald Trump. Joe Biden also... Again, they're staring at a big screen full of different boxes, various boxes of different people in the administration. It's basically an internal meeting that's being broadcast on television so Joe Biden can seem as though like he's in charge. You know, like, Joe's in charge here. Joe's got this one. Joe doesn't have squat, but that's what they're doing. And some of the boxes don't have video. For whatever reason, Joe seems confused by all of this. Theoretically, the president would be briefed as to who is going to be on video and who's just going to be on the phone. But you're dealing with an incompetent White House and a senile principal. Things can get a little dicey. Just listen to this guy and tell me if you think this is somebody who is in charge of all their faculties.
Well, look, if there's anything else you need, you know, just call. I mean, you got the team at the table there, a lot of them. And so just holler. All right. Now, Cedric, who are we going to next?
Governor Reese.
You are. I understand, Gov, you're not on video, but you are on the telephone. So, Gov, fire away.
Well, thank you, Mr. President.
Who are we? Don't worry. You can call anything. You can do this. Let me ask my boy who to go to next. Who's next? Yeah, you know, the governor of the state might actually be there because, you know, he's the governor. Maybe you want to be aware. Maybe you probably should have read the sheet of the people who are going to be on the call there, Joe. And it was all covered in that. Or maybe you paid attention during the briefing. It was all covered during that, Joe. A senile old man doddering. Now, meanwhile, he's going to dispatch 5,000 troops. 5,000 troops across 11 states, probably mostly across one or two, to help with the recovery from the hurricane. He dispatched 6,000, maybe 7,000 troops to Afghanistan. The more troops he dispatched to Afghanistan, the sadder the story of Afghanistan gets, because they got, by their own estimates, 5,400 Americans out so far. 54. So if you sent 7,000 troops, even if you sent 6,000 to get out 5,400 Americans, that means that every American got their own troop. And then there were a bunch left over. And you left thousands of Americans behind, by the way. You left thousands of Americans behind. Every single day, every time they try. And this, if this is what they came up with, if this is what the brain trust at the White House, sitting together going, we need to find a way to get, sort of change the narrative that Joe Biden is a doddering old man in over his head in Afghanistan. We need to come up with some kind of way. How are we going to change it? And somebody raises their hand and goes, well, we've got the hurricane. And somebody probably thought, the hurricane? You mean the cane that stands by itself? No, no, no. The hurricane. We can pretend that Joe Biden is really on the ball on this one. He's, in fact, focused like a laser on people getting rained on. So he can ignore people having, you know, terrorism rained on them, because he's worried about people getting rained on. And somebody in the chain of command over there at the White House said, you know what, that's a pretty good idea. Let's convene this thing. Little did they know, and they always seem to forget what a kind of actual boob they're really literally dealing with. And it's not good. So thank God for, you imagine being reliant on this guy for anything? You imagine the horror of thinking my life is dependent upon Joe Biden doing the right thing? I get it. If you're an American, you know that my life is dependent upon the United States government coming to my rescue. I have faith, you would have thought 2 weeks ago, I have faith that my government will come to my rescue. My government will take care of me, will protect me. That's the benefit. That is the job of being an American. That's the silver lining. There it is right there. As an American, I can count on this. And now after this guy, you go, okay, maybe I can't count on that. Maybe I need a plan B. Maybe I've got to make sure that I can take care of myself. Scary stuff. This guy's the best the Democrats could come up with. I'll never tire of saying that. This is the best the Democrats could come up with. Remember that at every level of voting, when you go out and vote next time, Joe Biden was the best that the Democrats could come up with. They had 4 years. They had 8 years where they could have groomed. Well, they had 4 years under Trump, though. But they had 4 years. They had decades, really, to groom anybody. And the best they could come up with was a 78-year-old senile, hair-sniffing weirdo from Delaware. Lastly today, I want to just talk about how out of touch, clueless celebrities, our liberal celebrities, are. And you know, everybody watch at some point, you probably saw a Conan O'Brien show, and the fat guy sitting next to him on the stage there pretending to do like a really poor impression of Ed McMahon. It was a guy named Andy Richter. Andy Richter, I don't know what he ever did before. He became famous because of Conan O'Brien. He seems to be kind of angry about Conan O'Brien. But he is a massive lib. He is just a really, like, you sit there and you think, this guy is not somebody you want to be stuck in an elevator with. Not because he's so obnoxious, but because he turns on a dime to be what seemingly unhinged lunatic, and you think this guy could be quick to violence. I don't want to be around that on an elevator. I don't want my kids around that. I don't want anybody around that. But that's just how he is. He freaks out on people on Twitter constantly. Well, the other day he tweeted, quote, my son is looking for a studio apartment around USC, and one that he applied for a couple of days ago told us that the owner wanted 6 months rent up front. After he and I both paid app fees, No wonder people effing hate landlords and the management companies that facilitate them. Yes, Andy Ricky's very mad. How dare they? They're charging 6 months rent. That is awful. This is terrible. And my God, that landlord deserves every bit of scorn and scrutiny that Andy Richter wants to pin on them. Except for, of course, that's not really what's going on. It's not those evil landlords who are out there sitting there attacking people, trying to screw people over and make sure that nobody gets to rent in these apartments. No. It's because of the Biden administration, an administration Andy Richter wholeheartedly supports, and their eviction moratorium. And moreover, it's because of California's Governor Gavin Newsom, because while this national moratorium on evictions was overturned by the Supreme Court last week, California, at least they did it the right way, they have their own rent moratorium out there in California. So landlords are sitting there going, I don't know if I can trust anybody to move into my place and actually pay the rent. Why would they pay the rent if they don't have to pay the rent and I cannot get rid of them? So to protect themselves, they are asking for and demanding, and they're going to get it because in round colleges, you know, you've got to have a place to live. They're demanding 6 months rent up front. So at least they're guaranteed 6 months worth of rent on a year lease. And the reason they have to do that, again, is because of liberal policies removing all consequences from not paying your rent. Isn't that lovely? There are landlords going bankrupt today because of liberal policies designed to keep people in their homes, to keep people from going bankrupt. Liberal policies are causing people to go bankrupt. Let that one, stick that in your pipe and smoke it. See if you can make any sense out of that one. Well, that's about all the time we have for today, ladies and or gentlemen. I don't judge. That's not true. I judge constantly. Thank you for listening. I appreciate the use of your ears. We'll be back tomorrow for another borrow. If you don't mind, get outside as best you can. Try and enjoy some of this nice weather before this hurricane breaks up if you're on the East Coast and starts raining on you. Or, well, be jealous that we get water from the sky if you're on the West. Have a great one.
I'm here with my senior advisor and boy who knows Louisiana very, very well.